This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And are you looking for your next investment opportunity? Well, Interactive Brokers' Global Analyst Tool helps you uncover hidden opportunities in the global stock market. With its unique features like the World Data Screener, you can precisely predict and pinpoint undervalued stocks by comparing prices and financial metrics of global stocks all in the same currency. Plus, the World Map Screener allows you to quickly find stocks that meet your specific financial criteria across the universe of global equities. Imagine the advantage of making better investment decisions with powerful tools at your fingertips. Don't miss out on your next great investment. Interactive Broker clients in over 200 countries and territories trade stocks and options, futures, currencies, bonds, funds, and more than 150 global markets from a single unified platform. The best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Experience the power of IBKR Global Analysts for free today at ibkr.com/globalanalyst. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The disciplined investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Degenerate economic trends and the executive orders are flying. Startups, private equity, and venture capital. And our guest today to talk about all this is Howard Lindzen, founder of Social Leverage. All this and much more on episode number 905 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there, it's Andrew Horowitz. How are you? Are you keeping warm? It is freezing. I mean, this week in Florida, I know this is for some of you like, huh? What is he talking about? That's not cold. It was like 47, 46 degrees. As a matter of fact, northern parts of Florida, you know, got some weather. They got snow. In fact, I saw some report that every single state in the country, including Alaska, of course, and Hawaii, all got snow over the last week or so. I guess Hawaii probably got it in the mountains, so that doesn't really necessarily count. But nonetheless, it is cold. Hopefully you're staying warm. Hopefully your portfolio is also. We are insulated from some of the problems. You know, you don't go outside in the cold weather with a bathing suit and all wet, right? You don't go out with wet hair. You don't go outside. What do you do instead? Well, you warm up. Depending on how cold it is, you put on a jacket, you put on some gloves, you put on maybe even long johns, maybe you put on a hat, maybe even got one of those little warm potatoes that you're holding in your hand on the way to school, like my parents did, right? Well, that is the same thing that we want to deal with when it comes to your portfolio. We want to make sure that in all weather conditions, you are situated well. That's some of the things we're going to be talking about over the next few weeks and months. Of course, that is the idea that in the beginning of this year, I said, we are going to talk about some education, use some of the current issues that are out there, some of the things that we know about, and transpose them into an easily understandable way for you to look at the things that are going on. And in particular, one of the things that you have to realize is that right now there's a lot going on. I mean, when we are seeing that every day, four or five different headlines in the morning, some in the afternoon, some that contradict each other from the president and their team and the new administration that's coming in, whether it's something like cutting FEMA or even changing the DEI constructs, what they have as a legislation, or maybe even some issues related to, I don't know, oil, fracking, wars, deregulation. All these things are market moving events, and how we deal with these things with understanding of where we are, not only now, but where we want to be in the future, I think is extraordinarily important. So we're going to get to all that. We're going to talk about all that. But the one thing I do want to tell you today is it is not a time to be weak handed. That doesn't mean you need to be overly bullish, but you're going to see a lot of headlines slashing around things that will happen and things that maybe won't. Ideas that will come to pass that may be good and some that will be very bad. And markets will react on that on a regular basis. For example, last week, when speaking in Davos, President Trump basically said, we want lower interest rates and we're going to press to make that happen. That's something that doesn't usually occur with presidents as they stay out of the politicians usually stay out of the fray when it comes to central banks around the world. The only time that we see things like that is in some crazy countries, like when Erdogan in Turkey decided that lower interest rates are actually deflationary. And decided that he was going to force his central bank to do something about it. When they said they wouldn't, what did he do? He disbanded them and basically took over as the central banker. And we saw inflation in the 40, 50, 60, 100% zone for some time in Turkey. Because we know the reality is that lower interest rates are not in fact deflationary there. They're inflationary. And many of the things that are going on right now with the deregulation, with the growth, pro-growth tone that is going on with the idea that we are going to have lower interest rates and tariffs, these are inflationary matters that we need to look at very carefully, especially on top of a generally stagnating point where we are not seeing the disinflationary trends moving at all anymore. So where do we go? Well, we're seeing that some of the growth-oriented stocks have been, I would say, consolidating. We're seeing some other things that are happening, some things we talked about on DH Unplugged, where myself and John C. Dvorak get together each week. We talk about how the idea of some of the advanced ideas, the picks and shovels, but also some of the tertiary concepts that are going to be spun out of AI, data centers, large-scale compute, like small modular reactors in the nuclear energy area, the utility stocks that are a clear potential winner from a lot that's going on. Maybe the Stargate is going to require enormous amounts of energy. Where does that come from? The grid these days are not equipped at all to give us what we need. Where are we going to go to get that? How are we going to do it? Are we just going to go, well, we're just going to try to frack it all up and maybe natural gas it? Well, I don't think so. Windmills, solar, renewables, probably not. We need a new energy form. We need to go back to some of the more efficient and clean energy that we have. And that's nuclear, let's be honest. Now, there may be some breakthroughs on some things in the future, but right now the breakthroughs are the small modular reactors. And there's a variety of companies that are doing that. We talk about that on DH Unplugged, those particular names. And in fact, we've bought those for our clients. We have a nice chunk in our TDI managed growth strategy for clients of those particular investments. And if you look at some of them, yeah, they've done pretty well. Some of them are just kind of holding in there. But generally speaking, the prospects going forward are pretty bright. And some of them even have decent dividends. One of the things that you want to do is balance your portfolio. Sometimes you want those dividend stocks in there to give you that income stream because we know that the S&P 500 total return over many, many years, the compounding effect is not just from price appreciation of the stocks. It's also a good part of the total return has come from what? Well, dividends. Dividends. Big piece of it. Let's not forget that. So here we are in a situation where we're seeing that the growth aspect and prospects for the United States, pretty bright. Nothing's changed over the last, 3 months. It's still growing well. In fact, we saw an index on Friday, which is the S&P Global. We know the ISM does manufacturing and services. Well, there's some other ancillary, I would say, surveys that are done. And the services came in hot like it has been. But interestingly, this is the first time in a while that the manufacturing survey came in on Friday. It's not the ISM, but the manufacturing survey came in above 50, above the contraction line the first time in many, many months. Now, that could be a lot of reasons for this. Maybe it's the pull forward when we saw the idea that a lot of people are concerned about tariffs. That could be something that's going on. But the reality is that we're seeing right now is that there's a lot of activity. And that may or may not be just a sudden burst from the excitement of the pro-business administration that Trump has put together. It may be some fear over, let's get these products now, because if we don't, we're going to have a big problem. The bottom line is, though, that the economy in the U.S. is doing pretty well, and the idea to think that we're going to reduce rates at this point is not only silly, but if we do, I think will be catastrophic. We will blow the top off of growth, which will bring inflation to a level that we haven't seen since what it was a year and a half ago, which would require an extraordinarily major response. Or what it would do is essentially shut down the economy on its own. Higher prices beget higher prices, but higher prices also beget, well, lower prices, people not buying. You have to think about that. Now, we're going to have a great guest next week, Carson Block. He's coming on, and that's pretty exciting. For those of you that don't know Carson Block, he was at one time, or still is, a short seller. And he has a great newsletter and service, but he has some other things, too, that will be out there. So I'm pretty excited about Carson Block coming on. He hasn't been on for a very long time. And he's going to bring us I think he's going to have a great bit of information to impart on us. So that's Muddy Waters Research, by the way, Carson Block. Something else I'm going to talk about next week, and I want to feed this to you today. I want to give you a little bit of taste, but I want to talk about looking back a little bit, because a lot of people have a very disjointed opinion of what was the actual record of the stock markets and what happened and the differences between Bidenomics and Trumponomics. I think it's important to look at that, the juxtaposition of those two that are really right in front of us right now, because we're only talking about a week or so into this new presidency. And the fact is that we have to look at the differences, contrast them, compare them. Because we look back to the Biden administration, what happened there, 2021, you know, the S&P did great, right? Closing up more than, what, 28%. We did well in the NASDAQ. 2022 was a crumbling environment. Nothing did well. There was no escaping what was one of the worst years in history for bonds. Terrible year for stocks. NASDAQ 100 dropped how much? More than 30%. Well, some of these things we're going to talk about, I want to talk about, like, overall what happened during Biden's term with all these different indices and compare them to what happened, and also then look at Trump's history. One of the, I would say, a unique opportunity to do a look back and the potential for a look ahead. You know, when's the last time ever, never ever, that we had a president, another president, and then the same president come back 4 years later? Well, the good news is we know what their stance generally is and how things reacted to that. So when we look at Trumponomics, when we look at that and we see what's happening, we look at the economic landscape, I think we're going to get a great vision into the future. One of my friends said many times to me is, do you know? He says, do you know they're telling us what to do? Just like that, he says it, by the way. They're telling us what to do. And at first I was scratching my head saying, who is telling us what? Then I realized they're blatantly just saying, hey, go out and buy crypto, go out and buy stocks, go out and get real estate, because we're going to lower rates, we're going to reduce regulation, we're going to really supercharge the economy. They're telling us this. They're opening up, like the Trump team, when I say team, the Trump family, opened up a cryptocurrency platform and then talking about making a potential stockpile of coins, going out and getting Trump coin. All these things, those are just examples. But maybe we have to listen a little closer as investors and not be so skeptical immediately. Now, maybe down the road it could implode, but, you know, we're talking about just looking objectively at what's just apparently happening, whether we like it or not, and looking to ride that. Something to think about. We'll talk more about that next week right here. Right now, we're going to take the next segment and get right into our discussion with our guest this week. But first, I have another question for you. Will the year-over-year change in the U.S. Consumer Price Index exceed 2.8% in January 2025? You can trade your prediction at Interactive Brokers. If you agree, you buy yes. If you don't, well, buy no. Correct predictions earn $1 and incorrect ones settle at zero. IBKR Forecast Trader lets you use exchange-listed forecast contracts to trade your opinion on yes or no questions on political, economic, and climate indicators. Plus, you'll earn 3.83% APY on your investment with an interest-like incentive coupon. Will the average U.S. temperature in January 2025 be greater than 34 degrees? Well, go to IBKR.com/forecast to get started today. And our guest today is Howard Lindzen. He has over 20 years of experience in both public and private market investing. He previously founded and managed the hedge fund Lindzen Capital and is currently the founder and general partner of the early stage venture capital firm Social Leverage, as well as the CEO at StockTwits, which is the leading platform, social platform for traders and investors. And through Social Leverage, he and his partners have been seed investors in startups like Robinhood, Beehive, and Manscaped, to name a few. He is also the founder of Wallstrip, which was acquired by CBS. And throughout his career, Howard has strongly advocated for and helped drive the decentralization and democratization of investing. Pretty cool. So let's get right down to it. Howard Lindzen, has been a long time. You know, 2018 was the last time you were on the show. And
Was I good?
Of course. I mean,
what was my best idea? Did I have a good idea?
Well, back then you were talking about decentralization. You were talking about Bitcoin. So I guess that was a good idea.
Okay.
And, you know, the first time we met, you and I, was back in like 08 when you were starting out this thing called Wallstrip at the time.
Yeah, but that was 06, so that's really dating us. And then we sold it to CBS.
Right.
And then I started StockTwits in 2008.
And we had your good friend Brian Shannon on maybe 4 weeks ago.
He's a super talented individual.
Yeah, I love his stuff. So I got a lot of things to talk about. And you're an entrepreneur, we know, but just to get this out to the audience, an investor, a teacher, and I'm paraphrasing something that has stuck with me many since I met you, actually, something you said, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember exactly. You said something like, ride the wave as far as possible and then get off before you crash.
Yeah.
You remember saying that?
It's the old name of my newsletter was Trends, Find Them, Ride Them, and Get Off. And it doesn't matter where you buy a stock because people say price matters, and it does, especially in my venture business. And price does matter if you're a long-term holder, but it's about how you discipline your exits, you know, how greedy are you? But great companies are so hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
And indexing does a very good job, especially market cap weighting index, the way the world's wired these days works very well. So it's kind of its own momentum system in itself, the QQQ or the SPY. And who knows when that ends and what the thing that unravels that, I don't know. And I'm not smart enough to think or care about it. But most people just don't realize how hard it is for a company to continue to grow and accelerate. And so picking companies, if you're lucky enough to ride a few trends, you have to have a strategy for getting off.
It's interesting because I think that's a less known or appreciated fact that the way a market cap works is it is essentially a trend following mechanism.
I'll give you the most recent example, Robinhood, mm-hmm. which we were the seed investors in, and it was just nothing but momentum, you know, right through the IPO, other than the GameStop. And then, 2020, goes from where we invested at 8, 10 million valuation to 30 billion, let's call it 40 billion mm-hmm. at the IPO, right? And we sold some along the way because it was not liquid. And then it goes public and nothing really changed except the market. And within, a year and a half, it was at $8 a share. It was, trading at cash value almost. And because it was under, $5 to $10 billion at the time, ETFs, it's not market cap way, right? No ETFs own it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like, being a second grade movie star. No one's looking at you. And the ETFs and funds, you're too small for them to buy. And now all of a sudden, right? At $40 billion, every ETF owns it. And so momentum works in the opposite way, whether it's overvalued or not. People could argue all day. Every time there's a dip in the market, because Robinhood's now in the index, a lot of the indexes, it'll get bought on dips because, you know, Betty Lou, you know, and Marianne and Frank put their money into their ETFs every month. And when the, and Robinhood becomes part of the system, right? Part of the trend following system. So mm-hmm. I just think people aren't really understanding the very basics of why indexing has been a great thing, right? They're very simple momentum strategies, imperfect, of course, but it's just really been an underrated strategy. Yeah. Now, I also am for people picking stocks, so they just have to have, you know, discipline about that.
Yeah, just I think, and congratulations if you still have a nice piece of Robinhood, because I think it was one of the major firms, was it Morgan or was Goldman, or somebody named it one of their best picks for the year, just like last week.
Yeah, well, I'm skeptical of that. I mean, they should have been out there when it was $10 doing that. But that's not how Wall Street works, including them.
Right.
They're just as much a momentum investor as Marianne at home.
Yes.
And people need to learn how the system works. But a lot of the system works just because of the way money works. Money chases, even though we tell people not to chase, money chases. Yeah. And the way the indexes are set up is market cap weighted, the index chase.
Yep.
But once you're in the index, the system works that even if you're Wells Fargo and they're committing crime, every day that the business operates is committing a crime because it's in the Fortune, because it's in the S&P 500, which has always been my nemesis of indexing, is like, why do I have to own Wells Fargo? Why do I have to own Goldman Sachs? And I just think the shame about Vanguard, we're already off topic, but the shame about Vanguard and what this new generation, like a company like Freck that we invested in, but what's a shame about indexing in Vanguard is they never took it the next step, which is like, all right, I don't want to pick stocks, but I'd like to unpick a couple that aren't going to change my results. But I just, the integrity wise, I just don't want to be associated with these five brands, you know?
I hear you. I get
and
it.
So that's why, there's disruption. As companies just miss a couple things, and Robinhood slid in on their own way because people didn't want to build another E-Trade.
Yeah.
And so there's always, you know, the market just creates these holes that entrepreneurs fill in.
Yep.
And you got to get the timing right and blah, 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 and execute. But that's how Robinhood, you know, over 12 years has become a $40, $50 billion company.
It's amazing. Amazing story. I mean, it also came amazing. At the right time.
Honestly, it's, I remember when we invested the first time, I said, there's no way this can't be a billion-dollar company. You know, and all my LP, and I was like, what? And all my LPs are like, how are they going to make money? Right. And I'm like, we're not even thinking about that. Like, you know, so it's like, but then when it got to $1 billion, I'm like, there's no way this could be 10 billion. We were so happy to sell a little, so again, we're wrong all the time as people should, but like, you know, in our heads we couldn't, like, we knew it could get to $1 billion, but when it got to $1 billion, we were like, well, this is crazy. And now that it's at $40 billion, Goldman Sachs is like their best idea. So, you know,
and by the way,
what does anybody know?
By the way, that company, that little company that you thought would maybe be a billion, changed the industry.
Changed it and continues to do it. And I'd be doing, you know, as I play a fake CEO on the internet, the CEO of about 400 companies on the internet. But we call it armchair quarterbacking, which is what stock twits and Twitter are.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I just think they're getting started. Again, forgetting valuation and forgetting, you know, multiples, the company's just getting started.
Yep. So I was going to ask you, because I don't know if we've ever talked about this, and this is going to be about face for a second. How did you originally get interested in the area of investing and private equity and all the things that you have done? And then I want to get into some of these things. But what was the genesis of Howard Lindzen's interest? Was it, you know, walking around in a suit and a tie at like 9 years old and with a briefcase kind of thing?
No. I did stand out. I was a very creative, grew up in Toronto born in 65. So it's like, you know, the formative teen years, 14, there's no internet. I don't even know if there was fire back then in 1979.
By the way, that's the same year I was born.
There was no fire and I had hair. But yes. In 1979, you had a TV as a rich kid. I had a TV and watched Johnny Carson, you know, late night. And that was my hero. Like that was your, that was who I just, that's, it was the coolest guy on earth. Right. Mm-hmm. And you'd have on these guests, they'd be smoking butts, they'd be ripping each other. And then there was, and then you also had the time of Second City in Toronto. Oh, so,
that's the best.
So, and then you had like, well, Second City, John Candy, Eugene Levy, Jim Carrey was doing stand up in Toronto, Mike Myers. And so that was a cultural thing. And so I would go to comedy clubs and sneak in and see Jim Carrey, you know they were going to be famous, but you remember how good they were. That's how stunningly obvious it was, right? There was something in the water. And so I went down that rabbit hole until I was about 20, going to clubs, doing writing. Obviously not talented. I knew in my soul that like, yeah, I'm funny, but like there's a difference between being funny and like, and being like Jim Carrey at 15 and slaying it and doing voices. Like right. You were watching Tiger Woods. You knew you were watching something,
right?
But there was no internet. So you couldn't relate it to anything. It was a local phenomenon, you know? And then 10 years later, you see him in movie and you go, I knew it. Like, thank God I didn't go into comedy. So I had that background, and lucky for me, I also had a flea gene that said, like, get me out of Toronto and get me to the sun in the United States. I went to Arizona State, and my parents, we used to go to Arizona for holidays, and I just like, I'm going to Arizona State. And I backed into it investing because I graduated, I needed a job, you know, it was the recession of 1990. And, you know, stocks were in the top. I didn't know anything about stocks, truly. But I had an MBA. And it's just, back then you looked in a newspaper. There was no, you know, you went on the classifieds. And I was just like cold call. It was like, I'll take a $40,000 a year cold calling job. And that's how I got into it.
Huh.
It was not because I wanted to. It was just like, I got to fucking stay in America.
Right.
It was cold calling people to buy Blockbuster and Compaq computer.
Oh, I remember those days. I think you may have called me.
Yeah, we probably did. And I just fell in love with the idea of investing.
So some of the things we talked about, I asked you to kind of come up with some ideas on things. And I want to talk about stock Twitch. By the way, if most people don't know, I believe you're credited with the advent of the $ hashtag on Twitter.
Yes, hashtag.
Hashtag. Okay. But that was, in other words, let me just, for those people that may not be totally familiar with it, when you go on Twitter and somebody puts, for example, you know, a hashtag, a normal hashtag, well, there was an idea, well, if we have a stock symbol, how do we identify that as a stock symbol? And what could we do with it as a aggregator and a coordinator of that stock symbol into a list, let's say. And Howard and his, I guess Howard did it, as far as I know, I'm giving you full credit, came up with that idea.
Yeah. So there was no iPhone yet. It was just fascinating to me, Twitter. I was using it to tell people where I peed. Like no one got it. It was, you know, Twitter was still on BlackBerry and the web, right? So it was very early. And I didn't get it fully. I was like goofing. There was a bunch of venture capitalists like me on there. It was just so obvious to me, right? As a trader that like, oh my God, like I can't figure out on Twitter if someone's talking about I bought a green apple at the market or I was at the Apple store and it's crowded, right? Mm-hmm. Like how do you, and you know, everybody's using the hashtag, but there was so much spam even then. And so I had the idea of like, wait a minute, no one's, you know, people already know what the ticker symbol is, AAPL. And instead of, I just started doing $ stuff and people just, it just really caught on. And I would call it Fred Wilson calls it a very clever idea. And that's about all it was.
Well, it was a great idea. Quickly
we moved to build like a community around that. Right. And, you know, it culminates, like I didn't think it would take this long, but like this, like last weekend, Trump launched $ and he tweeted it out for Christ's sake. So at some level, no matter what I do in my life, that'd probably be the most proudest thing is even though Trump used it for a grift, I expected this to happen, right? If you create a language, people will use it. That makes sense. And so Trump tweets out $ Trump. And what did he create? You know, and that led to.
That was
to
a big move.
Big fucking move.
That's a big move.
And
on the weekend.
So it's like, did he use stock Twitch? No, but like that's where, you know, and Elon's killed the hashtag because the hashtag spam. So it's like, we created something that truly is unique and I don't need the credit for it. It's just fun in the wild to just know. I think when people, I mentor a lot of young, you know, we're venture capitalists. So we deal with a lot of young people and I'm like, it's so hard. And everybody thinks it's so easy because they cherry pick the one company like Robinhood or Facebook and it gets glamorized. And no, that's just one out of 1,000.
Yeah.
And the other 999 are grinding away in, you know, what do you call it? In an oblivion, and like stock twits. And so you have to, you know, it's a grind and you're not going to be famous. And, you know, be careful what you wish for. But, you know, with the dollar sign, it's fun to think back and like, man, and we've made a lot of mistakes along the way, but like that's held the test of time, which is pretty cool.
I mean, when you were talking about how in the beginning, it's like, what do I do? How do I work this? And people didn't get it.
Yeah.
It took me, I'm not even kidding. This is a really terrible confession, but it took me the longest time to figure out if I want, do I need to put a dot in front of somebody's name or not to reference that? It, like, I couldn't get it through my head what was going on. Like,
well,
how
it's
was,
like any language, right? Like everybody's used to speaking one way, and in your defense and my defense and everybody's defense, look at crypto. Everybody's used to norms in how things work, and crypto is the exact opposite of how things work, right? Like, they give you an example. Trump, he used the dollar sign. He didn't use Goldman. He didn't use a bank. He didn't use Wells Fargo. He didn't use Visa. He didn't use an exchange. He didn't use Coinbase. He didn't use Robinhood. He didn't use anything except his voice and tweet and distribution, you know, pre-planned or not, to hundreds of thousands of wallets and literally flipped the system.
Yeah. 550% gain.
Call it a grift. Call it whatever you want, because it is a grift, because it's a meme coin. There's nothing behind it. But let's be honest. DJT is a worse scam than Trump. Now, Trump could care less about which scam he's pulling, right? DJT is an awful scam that Gary Gensler allowed to happen. And why would you buy DJT, which is tied to a terrible business, regulation, costs, employees, when you're betting on Trump versus buying dollar sign Trump on, at least you're getting absolutely what you paid for, thin air, and a bet on how many people want to own Trump.
Yeah. Pure speculation. The purest.
I'm for pure speculation. Everybody knows the rules. It's like, you know, it's like the one, if everybody knows the rules, pure speculation, I'm cool. You're the idiot who wants to bet that the other guy's going to buy it higher. Great. Right. But DJT and all the other stuff we've seen in the stock market with gold and like who the gatekeepers are. Like, why is DJT, like, in a better way, Trump at least, that's all it is. Because Truth Social is never going to be a business. Paying regulators to keep DJT going and all those, what a scam.
Yeah.
Meaning at least dollar sign Trump meme coin is you get what you see.
Right. There's nothing behind DJ. There's nothing behind the meme coin per se, but there is
a fake something behind DJT. So think about the inefficiency to get that going and keep that scam going versus DJT. It's just out there in the ether.
Yeah.
And people based on, I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, should you waste your time doing it? No. But for millions of kids that are going to learn how to trade instead of paper trading, great.
Yeah.
I think that'll teach you fear and greed. It'll teach you what taking a loss looks like. It'll teach you what it feels like to feel stupid. And what a great way to learn.
Yeah. Let's talk about stock twits a little bit more in depth. Sure. Let's just look at it this way. I'm your average guy out there. I'm thinking about, hey, I want to learn more about stocks. Where do I go? And you can go on to various places that have, commentary, right? You know, but this is short form. This is the short form. Well, it could be a little bit longer form. But tell me about, like, what do I do? How do I sign up? What's involved?
It's a good question. I mean, the easiest thing to do is download the app. But I'm a desktop person. But download the iPhone app. And build a watch list. Like, what are the 10 favorite companies that you like? Like any financial site, I would say get a watch list, right? And then that's about it. And, you know, once you have a watch list, you can go engage and chat. And, you know, Apple's Justin Timberlake, right? Like Bitcoin is this celebrity. I think of tickers as celebrities, right?
Ah.
For some reason, people like talking about Bitcoin, even though they know a lot or a little about it, right? So it's a community gathered around a ticker. Very bizarre. because it's an inanimate object. But at the same time, it's one of the biggest hobbyist worlds, communities in the world. And yeah, it's 85% male. So if you're a female out there, know that. We can't change the rules. It's a male, you know, we can name 100 reasons why. I think it's men are from Mars, women from Venus, whatever. Yeah. But the simplest way is to do that. It's a very simple app. It's free. Go in there. If you want no ads, you can pay for $10 a month for a no ad version. It's very simple. I would do that. And then find people like me at Howard Lindzen. So the idea is, I've always thought about, and it's not so much that we're a social media company because we're really a ticker following, you know, what Twitter really should have done. So imagine now you know me, and you can tell me to fuck off, or you can tell me I'm Hitler or whatever based on my commentary, but you can quietly just follow along as I share ideas, and you can say hello or whatever, and you don't have to ever have to engage in the ticker stream, but go find, you know, and I point out 10 or 20 people like Alpha Trends and all these people that I follow, and what an amazing way to draft behind people. So think about cycling. There's this peloton, you know, and you go watch the Tour de France, and there's one guy that's carrying all the way, and there's 30 people behind him or 100 people behind him, and then 10 miles in, he's tired, he drafts back a little, and 100, you know. And that's what investing is, right? Trend following. You want to find people that are smart.
You know, what's interesting also is that you also created something from there. And that is a branch from that where you can find on various platforms that there is a, you know, you see like fundamental analysis, technical analysis, and they also have something called social sentiment. And that's from you.
Yeah. So now with AI, it makes it much easier. So if 1,000 messages a day are streaming through on Netflix after earnings, you could either go through them, but now that AI exists, within a month or so, you'll show up on StockTwits and you won't have to read the 1,000 messages. It'll just give you, this is a quick oversight of the last 1,000 messages. So think what makes me excited today versus starting this company 17 years ago is now tech. When I started this company as a non-tech person, it was a bad idea to start in 08 to start a tech company when you had to build for BlackBerry and you had to build for iPhone and then Android and then HTML5 and then Facebook. I mean, I had no chance. Somehow we survived. But in today's world, where the computers are doing all the work and you can use them for you, the user's just going to have an incredible, like where StockTwits is headed is, hey, we treat our customers right, like a bar, like a hotel, whatever. They show up, they share, they type, they give their ideas. Our job is to stay out of the way. As long as people are behaving, our number one rule is it's unlike Twitter, we believe that we're not a free speech company. We're a behavior company. If you're misbehaving, you've blown it. To me, that's like the biggest.
For example, there is the potential always in these kinds of platforms for someone to tilt the scales, not someone, but.
You should assume that. So my point to people who are paranoid about that, I go, why are you investing? If that's your paranoia, you just shouldn't be investing because that's happening.
Right.
Assume everything you read from whether it's Bill Ackman or Howard Lindzen or you or your mom, someone has an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't believe that, you are the sucker in the room. So the number one thing about investing is assume it's rigged. No different than the Trump coin. If you start investing with that assumption, you will have a much better chance of both being successful, okay, and enjoying it a little more. Because yes, you are the sucker in the room. Goldman, Visa, all the fees, all the miscommunication. Who's got the first news? I mean, how many choices there are for people to? So assume what you're reading is the opposite, and
and that's what I tell everybody. I say to people, look, I'm not investing because it's rigged. Just hold on a second. And I'm going to say this because everybody's heard me say it, but I'm going to say it to you. If you go to Vegas with me and I point over to that slot machine, I say, that slot machine is rigged. It's rigged, by the way, in favor of the slot machine puller. And you say to me, I'm not playing. I'm like, why? What do you mean? We know it's rigged. Listen, when I say rigged, use that word as it's supposed to be meant.
Well, let me just explain the difference between the two, because I think there's a subtle difference. Because the house is the house.
Yes.
Okay? And you don't know how they've rigged it. So, yes, as long as you know that play, because they got to pay somebody or no one would play. So if you feel you're the one, like, I just assume someone's with a camera, so I might as well strip to my shorts and start dancing and be really loud because they're more likely to pay me out. Just because, look at that crazy guy. So I'm saying, I assume it's rigged in that way. In the market, it's much different rigging, okay? Because, and here's the, and I forget who said this first, but it's so simple. The system is rigged. If you build, until it changes, the rules of the U.S. stock market for the 100 years or so that it's been around is if you make profits and if you deliver cash flow, and that is growing, you will be rewarded as a shareholder. That's just been the overarching long-term rule of the market. Now, sometimes that doesn't matter. Sometimes it's fake companies. But over 20 years, you can't get away with scamming people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the companies that actually produce profits and cash flows go up, growing, okay? So that's not rigged. So what would be dumb in a world that you know how the market works is to trade a lot, which is why ETFs and market cap weighted stuff in the end is a very smart idea. Pay the littlest amount of possible for the exposure to the market and then let the market do its thing.
Yeah, I would agree.
Sometimes you need to tell people
simple.
That.
By the way, that's simple.
And you're using the rigging in your favor.
Yep. Simple, okay? Simple,
now, if you want to step off that bicycle and to go into the true depths of rigging in stress, go pick stocks, but know the rules.
Yeah.
And so on StockTwits, I would tell you, find me, say hello, follow StockTwits, and then find 10 people. You could easily find 10 or 20 people. It's not in our interest to scam people. We're just writing down our ideas. And if you like what we're doing, you know, it's up to the investor. I'm not telling, you'll never hear me online or on a podcast, buy this. I will say what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Then you'll be lying, but I'm not going to say you have to assume that if I say I'm doing this, that I'm doing it. I'm not going to tell you how much I'm buying. I'm not going to tell you when I'm, you know what I mean? The reasons all the time, but that's all I share. And you know what? I've built up, you know, over years, tens of hundreds of thousands of people that just follow along.
Talk to me about the degenerate. I have like five things I want to more talk to you about. So let's quickly talk about the degenerate economic trends. What does that even mean?
The degenerate economy is nobody's fault. It's just this culmination of technology and culture and ZERP and rigging and the class war, you know, the haves versus the have-nots, all these things that have just happened. Blame whoever you want. But if you really step back and go, Jesus, it's obvious that kids are going to want to gamble. They can't afford a home. They've been screwed by the government. They have no COVID. Interest rates are now high. Their parents, they have anxiety. They've been fed sugar. They're vaping. And so you have these walking zombie. Yeah, I have two myself. I feel so bad for them. I felt when I graduated from college, I thought the world was my oyster. I can tell you from raising two, owning and operating two millennials that they are fucking stressed. Okay.
Yep.
Because they're not stupid. They see prices. They know the system's shit. They've seen our presidential candidates, 90-year-old people fighting. So what do? They don't care what Ackman or Warren Buffett said. They're looking at their friends group on Telegram and going, this guy made a fortune on a parlay. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying, understand the culture of what's happened, right? You hand these kids a phone, you hand them Uber and Lyft, you hand them DoorDash.
Well, they're overstimulated.
Hand them Spotify. Yeah. They have more free time than ever. They don't know what to do with said free time. They don't have to go to a bar to date. They can go on an app. So we've handed them a magic wand. And so when you add all that together and then work from home and then social networks and they're going to be degenerates, meaning they're going to talk, they're going to bet, they're going to, including all of us adults in our spare time, we'll throw a few bucks on a game, we'll do an option bet, we'll try a meme coin. So that is the highest level, what I call term of the degenerate economy. It's not to degrade this. This is just an economy that exists today that's massive. And when I say degenerate economy, I'm talking about Apple and Google, right? They're the arms supplier to your free time. And then I'm talking about CBOE and CME and ICE. I'm talking about Bitcoin. I'm talking about Robinhood and Coinbase. So I'm talking about the companies, not like, I'm not talking about GME or AMC.
You're talking about DraftKings.
I'm talking about DraftKings or Flutter.
Yeah.
I'm talking about companies that are going to make all the money from our degeneracy. Philip Morris from vaping. So we can, when I say degenerate economy, I say it as like, oh my God, this is a massive trend. Because when you hand 300 million people 10 extra hours in a day and then robots coming next and AI, what do you expect them to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to be completely invested in companies that this is just an obvious money spend. And that includes wealth management and money being passed down to the next generation. You know, tip to kids who have some wealthy parents, be nice. You're going to get the money.
Yeah. So this is not the polar opposite of, wow, look at that great manufacturing plant over there and these guys that are creating this really wonderful widget. You're just talking about money movement for the sake of making money on that movement somehow. Yes. And then capitalizing on that through the people that love the idea of just correct. Sitting back on their
picks
couch.
And shovels yeah. of degeneracy is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Now, can you go buy Boeing? Can you go buy GE? I'm not saying some of these things don't work, but why? Why do I want the infrastructure of that? If I want to invest in real estate, I want to invest in a real estate that houses NVIDIA machines and gets paid what it's really worth without humans. And or an Amazon warehouse that has robots instead of people. Like, why would I go? Like, why would Trump, again, I'm not talking politics. I'm talking just common sense. Why are we bringing manufacturing back to America? It's only, if we're going to do it right, we'd want robots doing it. So who cares about manufacturing, right? What we should care about is IP. So the two things America should care about is IP, because that's where the margins are, and then protecting America, Iron Dome. Like, if everybody hates us, let's focus on building an Iron Dome over the country.
Yeah.
Take the profits from IP, invest in our young kids, and protect. Put cops on the streets, put digital borders around the wall. I mean, you're not going to, that shouldn't be, that should be bipartisan, right? And if you do all that, no one needs guns. So take away automatic rifles. Okay, that's as far as my politics goes.
Yeah.
If we put cops on the streets, if we paid firefighters, if we just treated people nicely, and if we could trust that our government did the few things that we're supposed to pay taxes for, is protect us, make us feel safe, and make it fair, which is still hard to do, but they don't even focus on any of this. Everybody's... Wow. Thinking for himself. I call this the every man for himself economy on top of it, which is very dangerous.
But it's also, we've also refocused, we'll get away from this in a second. We've also refocused on, which is what you're saying, money. Money being money. The center money of everything.
And again, you can be mad at me for saying it out loud. I don't think it's, listen, I have money. I'm not like, thank God I do. I've spent 30 years trying to gather it. But hoarding it is not what it's all about.
Yeah. Hoarding, you know, and stamping it back,
putting it back in the system is fantastic.
Well, let's talk about some of that.
Unfortunately, the government's screwing us again, or not me, but you know, they're screwing younger people again, because at 5% cash on my cash, I'd be an idiot,
right,
to take risk with all the money I've made. If you're going to pay me 5% to be in T-bills and I'm 60 years old, why do I need to take risk to make 10%?
That's right? A great question.
This is the ultimate fuck you that they're doing again to the young generation. Yep. They bought all this money. They made it free. And if you didn't make it during that era, it's going to be 10 times harder to make it in a 5% era. I don't think people are being honest about how hard that is, because I know the game. Not saying I won't take risks, but now for me to take risks, it's got to be, I got to make 25%.
Well, the question also is why bother being in bonds? Like, when I say bonds, well, anything other than treasuries, right? What, just what's the point of that? Just stay in a 5%, 4.5%.
IBM bonds, I'll take my 5%,
and
I'll sleep, and I don't need to be the richest man in the world. And I know the system is rigged. So I say, like, you have to be honest with your place in the system, right? Where Stocktwit sits in the system. If you're following me, okay, you're ahead of most people, but you're not ahead of Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm listening to Elon Musk and all these people and trying to decipher the news, right? Like, so if you're following me, at least you can guarantee that that's my job. If I'm good at it, I'm following certain tea leaves, and that's why I love the idea of social networks, right? And that was the idea of Stocktwits. It's like, build a Peloton so that you can go faster. Maybe not better returns, but at least learn everything that social was supposed to bring: learning, mentorship, expertise, has turned into a yelling in a chest thumping exercise.
I haven't
it's
even been on
some experiment gone wrong. It's an experiment gone wrong.
I mean, I'll do stuff to go to sleep at night. I haven't looked at Facebook. I literally can't tell you how long that's been. And Twitter I do use for some stuff, but
yeah, Twitter I only use on the desktop, meaning it's like a drug. A couple times a day to go fart around,
microdosing.
But yeah, but if you're going to put it on your phone, you are now in the, you may be in the majority, but you are falling behind. Yeah. If you are not thinking about how to use AI agents, and I'm not, I'm just saying, if you're not thinking about that and you're still on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, you are the sucker in the room.
Mm. Let's now, talk about,
I don't say it to be mean. I say it, guys, wake up. No one important is using these. They're all there to push their agenda.
Well, that's it. It's just turned into a giant advertising platform. Yeah. Versus. Let me just kind of, cause I know you're limited on time. Your portfolio companies that you have through social leverage, for example, you have PunchUp.live, which is,
yeah,
as I say, connecting funny people to audiences. That's how I see it. It's a direct
future. Line. This is the fuck you to Facebook. So Facebook and TikTok and YouTube and Twitter. Think about the networks. There was an era of cloud that people think it could be reproduced again. No, what it took was perfect timing of the iPhone, perfect timing of the cloud, and perfect timing of zero interest rates, endless money to be raised for big ideas. To the victors go the spoils. You can argue about how it all played out, but it is what it is, right? So the idea was, I'm going to own my own data and I'm going to build up 100,000 followers. Well, guess what happened? The gatekeeper stepped in, Zuckerberg, and they tell you where your tweet goes to. You thought it went to 100,000 people. It goes to 2. Right. What did I do wrong? Who do I call?
Custom support ring.
FAA of tweets? No. I mean, so how many times do you need to be rug pulled to realize? And so who was the most rug pulled? People that invested like me a lot of time in Twitter. And Twitter, Elon can wake up one day and say, man, that Howard's a troublemaker. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Everything that I work for is gone. And they do this all day. And the people they do it to, as we saw with the woke crowd, again, I'm equally opportunistically mean to both sides, is what they did was they cemented their power. And we forgot that the most incredible delivery product that we still mostly use today is email. Not perfect, but Gmail and all the other email products. If you can guarantee, if you have an email customer like you do and like I do, I can know if I have a fan and they read my email, I can rest assured no one's screwing with that.
Right.
But if I tweet something out, who knows where it goes?
It's true. Right?
And who knows who's going to see it? And maybe more people see it, but my super fans aren't guaranteed of seeing it. So the world's going to move back to that delivery because we can't. How many times do you have to tell a comic or an actor or an entertainer or a writer that trust me, right? And then rug pull them. So PunchUp is just this very specific, like OnlyFans, a specific way to help comedians own their own audience.
That's awesome. And it's just
very simple idea. The time is right. The comedians understand. The comedians are back in favor. They can say whatever they want. They have huge audiences they built on YouTube. And by the way, even though they love YouTube, they've been getting rug pulled by YouTube.
Of course.
Like they say something racist, they say something offensive to the YouTube board.
Well, that may be changing. It seems like
the algorithm. Yeah. No, it won't change. But even if it does change, the comedian, the trust is out of the bag.
Yes, that's true because it can always change back again.
But all the time that a comedian goes on stage every day wearing a stupid t-shirt or a hoodie without their email, I've told every comedian and I'm friends with, I'm going to become friends with all of them, is like, guys, when you go in on stage, put your email address on it.
Yeah.
Your fans should know that the only way they're going to ever find you in the end is through pipes that are open, email. Now, you have to trust your service provider that they're going to be around. But if you have a Gmail account, you're fine. And yeah, if you're great and your audience loves you, they will open up your emails most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, and so someone like, and the perfect example is Louis C.K. Love him or hate him, he got kicked off the internet.
So funny.
Yeah, but he got kicked off the internet, right?
Yeah.
By the way, you show your penis to enough people, you're going to get kicked off the internet. So he got kicked off the internet. He was literally shadow banned by all of the oligarchs. Now, he was talented enough, but was forced to figure out how to build an email list and do his shows direct. All PunchUp Live is what Louis C.K. built for every comedian in a much better tech stack. And so it's a very, the right time by the right founder, and we think it's an incredible site. Like, you can go find hundreds of comics, the best in the world, and they're putting up their original content there, and you can follow them and find out where they're playing next. And it's just, it's the way an audience and their fans should interact with the celebrity or influence.
Right. Then you got Grass Clippings, which is a dedicated to par three golf, which is kind of interesting. I guess it's a, I don't want to call it speed golf. It's not that, but
yeah, it's top golf, but a real golf.
Right.
So you go outside and it's not 6 hours, it's 2 hours, but it's high skilled golf and we have lights. So it's the only lit golf course in Phoenix. And it's a real estate company, but it's also we're building a par three league like the LIV Tour. So we're letting people own teams and then bet and gamble. So it's a bit of degeneracy.
It's more of a drinking kind of fun, but yet outdoor and real.
Yeah. And we're building a league around and it's really exciting, but very weird. And it goes to our thesis of degenerate economy, peer-to-peer betting. Who needs to watch Tiger? Like TJ, like I love Tiger. I mean, he's amazing, but I don't need to see Tiger worth a billion play another guy worth a billion.
Yeah.
And if I do, I just want to bet my friend who's going to win. I don't need to watch anything else. The only thing that would matter if I'm watching Tiger is how can I bet 10 of my friends $10? I don't need to go to DraftKings. You know what I'm saying? I just want to bet who is out there. And so take that to the masses is the next thing. I'm not commenting whether that's good or bad, but the DraftKings is will go away in the future, right? Like, why am I using DraftKings? I can just bet my buddy $10 on the blockchain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, pay him in Trump coin or pay him in Doge or pay him in Solana. No, I'm serious. Like, all you should think about crypto as it's a change purse. It's just the new Venmo. You know, we're not there yet. And will you use Doge as that currency, or will you use Ethereum, or will you use a Solana or some other new thing, or Trump memcoin or Fartcoin? As long as your friend accepts it and can get exchange it to cash, that's all that matters.
Uh-huh.
And why? Why are they going to do it? Because if you gamble on Venmo, they will find out who you are and they'll kick you off Venmo.
Yeah. Well, it's like what's going on in Florida. You know, I don't know if you know about this, but Pornhub is out of Florida.
Jurassic Park. So you're going to close them off. And Venmo and PayPal are going to shut you off for gambling with your friends. Guess what you're going to do?
Right.
You're going to find another way to fucking do it.
Yep. The last one we have on my list, and I want to then ask you, how do people get involved in these things like you do, these non-profit startups and ventures? But Beehive, which is as I see it, at least from what I understand, it's a referral network to help, or a referral program to build networks, then therefore to help people distribute.
No.
It's not so right.
Think of Beehive. Good try, but like, please, everybody.
Scratch that.
It's been a very good interview. Scratch everything you just said. It's okay. You had 2 minutes to read this. A Beehive is very simply an email. So we made this huge bet on email, right? And Beehive is just a non-platform bet. If you want to start, if you feel you want to write or share videos or, yes, you have to build your audience from one. Right. Mm-hmm. You're not going to, unless you have 100 friends. But if you want to do this the right way, you should start a newsletter. Right. And you shouldn't have to have a whole website. So with 2 seconds, you can have your own email, you can name it, and you can just email it to your friends and slowly build your audience that way. So it's truly just it's just a product and a platform that helps creators quickly start doing it the right way, building their email list.
So it'd be something like this, that I send out an email, newsletter, commentary, whatever it is, to you, Howard, my friend.
Yeah, you may be using MailChimp or Klaviyo or whatever you're using.
And then
there's going to be a very lightweight version to go start it from scratch.
And then you're going to say something like, you know, there's tools in there like, hey, if you want to send this to your friend and they can click the subscribe button on.
Backwards. It's everything's built.
Right.
And you own your email list. So if Beehive goes out of business, you have your customer list. Right. And so the thing is, until there's a better mousetrap than email, it's still the best pipes.
Yeah, good stuff.
And we got sidetracked for 20 years, getting off email and focusing on giving Zuckerberg all our attention, and he can rug pull you.
Yeah, and change his mind whenever he feels. So how do I, your average guy out there, I want to get involved in this. I mean, obviously I could do it through social leverage, right? What are the MIMS? So tell me about the stuff that's going on there.
Yeah, we're just a typical seed stage fund. We raise 80 to 100 million every few years to write checks into 20 to 30 companies. And very high risk. We write like Robinhood or like Beehive, we're the very first check into a company. It's usually 10 to 15% of a company for $1 to $2 million. And the way venture capital works is very risky, right? We, as a firm, are shooting the best venture capitalists, you know, return high 20, low 30 net IRR, right? So think about it as like QQQs aren't enough action for me, or Bitcoin's not enough action for me. And that's kind of who you're. The S&P is not enough action for me. I want to try and double those returns. right? Mm-hmm. Now, in exchange, you're locking your money up for 7 to 12 years on average. People may tell you lower, but don't trust those people. And so, but the money's called as you need it. So what else is different? You don't put up all your money up front. So if you commit a $250,000, it takes 4 years. So you're holding your money. And then as we make investments, we call that capital from our LPs.
Yeah, good stuff.
So that's the only difference. Yeah, so you have stuff. And you have to find people that you think are good at what they do.
Right. Exactly. Well, we're going to have all the information over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, episode number 905 in the show notes there, how to get in touch with Howard and how to take a look at social leverage. I'll let Howard Lindzen, let's not make it so long next time till we get together again.
Yeah, anytime. This was fun. Great
Thanks
question.
So much, buddy. Thanks.
Okay. Cheers.
You know, sometimes you forget how good people are. You know, it's been a while since Howard was on. It was back in 2018, the last time. But, you know, you forget, well, you know, who should we get on? And I mean, he's great. That's why he's such a great following on StockTwits and why he's done and got to the point where he is in life as successful as he is. I really admire Howard. I think he's a great guy. And I got to tell you something. I'm so happy that we had the opportunity to talk with him this week. Like I said, just to remind you, Carson Block from Muddy Waters coming on next week. The following week, February 6th, Danielle DiMartino Booth, Fed Insider. We have Daniel Crosby the week after that. We're going to be talking about, his specialty is behavioral finance. Then we have some people coming up, experts in charting and commodities and value investing. So we have an action-packed discussion. Next week, we're also going to pick up on the comparatives and contrasting views of why and what and how, and a look back into Bidenomics versus Trumponomics and how that actually played out in the market. So to make sure to subscribe, make sure to follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the Twitter handle. Make sure to find me on whether it's Amazon or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, YouTube. We're all over the place. So make sure to tell your friends, to tell your relatives, to tell your enemies, anybody out there, shout it from the windows. Open your doors of your cars as you're driving around and just scream out the disciplined investor. And I am a disciplined investor. I want you to tell people that you are on your way to financial success, that you are on your way to financial security because you are disciplined in your investing process and techniques. Thanks so much for joining me this week and every week, and I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.